Welcome to the teaching ministry of City Church in Anaheim, California. Thanks for joining us. And now, here's today's message.
Hello. How are you guys doing? Everybody hear me all right? All right. Well, my name is Mark Moore. And was anybody here before when I've spoken? Spack? Excellent. Well, some of you guys are new. I'll introduce myself real quick. I'm in a reggae band. I have a cool job, the coolest job, tour all over the world. Been doing it for 22 years. I do it with my wife, and she plays bass in my band, and she also sings. She has a solo career. This year alone, since the last 4 months, we spent a month in Hawaii suffering for Jesus. Somebody's got to be on the front lines. And then we did two tours of Europe, all over Europe. And then we did a tour of Brazil, and in a few weeks we go back to Hawaii for another month, suffering for Jesus again. But in the last 4 months, we've seen 4,525 people give their lives to Christ, which has just been a tremendous, tremendous experience. Now, when we go out on tour, when we come back, we save on parking at LAX. My grandma lives just a few blocks from LAX, and so we park in her driveway a whole bunch of band members' cars, like five cars or so. My grandma, the reason why I'm even mentioning her is because her name is Ruth. And so when Kyle called me and said, hey, I want you to preach, I'm going to be out of town, and so is my wife. Will you take it over? I'll say hijack the service. And I said, sure, no problem. He's like, but you got to preach on a chick flick. I'm like, what you talking about, Willis? He's like, yeah, we're doing a summer chick. I'm like, what the heck? You're preaching on Ruth, too. And second I hear the name Ruth, I think of my grandma. Would you put a picture of my grandma up there? There she is. Look at her in this gown from 1955, I think. And she's eating, you know, her dinner at 5 p.m. I eat lunch at 5 p.m. If you notice in her hair is still black in certain places, a little bit gray. Anybody want to guess how old my grandma is? 75. Keep going. 81. 85. 90. Keep going. 97. 101. Keep going. 105. Nope. Infinity, somebody said. You are looking at a centurion. She is 108 years old. Now, when you're young, you start counting by months. Right now, she's 108. When you get old, you start counting by months, too. She's 108 and 5 months right now, which is pretty spectacular considering she walked with her walker right there to the table. She's eating her food. Now, you want to know what kind of exercise she does? She said, now, why would I exercise? She's never ran a mile in her life. She eats honey buns. She has cake with every meal. She eats pork, beef, you name it. It's all in the genes. This is my grandma. So I'm preaching today from my iPad. And so I come back from our last tour, and I show my grandma the iPad. Now, could you imagine being born before the telephone, being born before the automobile, being born before the microchip, seeing a cell phone come about, seeing an iPad? So she's touching this thing. And she's doing all these things. So show the next one. This is her looking at the iPad. And now normally she needs a magnifying glass to watch our music videos on my iPhone, but this one she didn't need. So then, you ever been to photo booth? You ever seen that on the iPad? Go ahead and show me the next one. This is her in photo booth. That's her in photo booth, and she freaked out, and she would kill me if she knew that I was showing that to you. So take it off quick. Go back to the nice picture of her. So... essentially, her name is Ruth, and she was named after this woman in this book. But that didn't mean anything to me until I really started diving into this text. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, we thank you for this book. We thank you for the Bible that is so living and active that it can truly change our lives. You can change our lives. Lord, we just pray today that we would surrender and let you. We would let you write our script, that we would let go of the things that hold us back and move forward, that we'd get out and start doing what you have called us to do. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, for those of you who weren't here last week, We're talking about a book in the Bible that you can wrap your head around. It's four chapters. Okay, now if you started, if you one day you said, I'm going to read the Bible from beginning to end, and you just wanted to kill yourself by the time you were halfway through Numbers or Leviticus, this book, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, four chapters. And in four chapters, it covers 13 years of history. This has taken place 1,300 years before Jesus came about. So essentially what you got is you got this old lady, and her name is Naomi. Now, I always have a problem remembering the old lady is Naomi because Ruth, I'm thinking she's 108. She's got to be older than Naomi, but just think the Judds. Naomi Judd. Okay, she's the mom, right? Okay, so you got Naomi. Her son's married. Tragedy happens. She loses her father. She loses her husband, and then she loses both of her sons. Famine is hit. She's left with her daughter-in-laws, two girls, and they're in this other country, Moabites, whatever. Basically, to Israel, they were heathen. They were essentially, according to Hebrews, they were like Satan worshipers, essentially. So she says, that's it. I'm going back to Bethlehem. I'm going back to Israel to where it looks like the Lord is blessing them. There's famine here. I'm going back there. Now, my daughter-in-laws, you girls have been so good for sticking around, but let's face it, even if I find a guy and have two kids with him, you guys are going to have to wait 18 years until you can marry him. It was weird. And it was odd for these daughter-in-laws because the typical thing would be, if your husband dies, will you marry the brother? Well, in this case, both brothers die, and these two women are sitting here going, well, what do we do? Three women now. They all lost their husbands. Horrible tragedy. So essentially, the last chapter was like the beginning of any chick flick, like English Patient or Atonement. It's just like depressing. It's about loss and pain, and you're crying, and you're like, oh, gosh. But you know there's hope. There's hope around the corner. Okay, so this Naomi, she heads back to Bethlehem, and she basically tells her daughter-in-laws, okay, you girls don't have to stick around with me. Go back to your home country, your hometown, whatever. And then, of course, one of them reluctantly does, and one of them says, no, I'm sticking with you, and that's Ruth. And that's where the most famous quote in the book of Ruth comes from. No, where you go, I'll go. Your God will be my God. You guys have heard that, right? But they rarely do quote, when you die, I'll die. Where I'm buried, you're buried. But that was in there, too. So Ruth is like, she's basically, I'm going to stick by your side through thick and thin. And I'm gonna die right next to you. That is serious, serious commitment. But what happens sometime in all of this tragedy, this woman named Naomi, she becomes bitter towards God. Now, Naomi, her name means pleasant. Pleasant. And by the time she gets to Bethlehem, she's like, my name isn't pleasant or lovely anymore. I want you to call me bitter, Mara, because the Lord, he's turned his hand against me. He's turned against me. And she uses words like in the first chapter, chapter 1, verse 12, hopeless. You find her crying. Basically, she's like a female Job. And you know what? I think she has some justified reasons to cry and to feel like there's no hope for her. She's too old to remarry. She's lost her sons. They can't even take care of her. Now she's stuck with her daughter-in-law. What the heck are we going to do? Now I got 2 mouths to feed. What in the world? The Lord has afflicted me, she says. He's brought misfortune on me. That's a horrible place to be. It's like Bitterman, party of one. It's just so tough. Now, Kyle, as we are here right now, he is just chomping at the bit. He's like, I wish I was there. I wish I was there. My baby is alone. Is Mark doing all right? What's going on? Rest assured, dude. Just enjoy your time in Israel. He's going to listen to this after the fact. He's like, okay, it's good. It's good. Now, I heard a story of a guy who went to Israel. Now, I don't know if you know, but Kyle's in-laws actually sponsored his trip, sported for him to go there and have this incredible, what is it, 3 weeks? In Israel, which is so cool. I heard this story of a guy named George who went to Israel with his family. He went to the Middle East, and when they were in Jerusalem, his mother-in-law died. And it was horrible. And so he goes to the American consulate, and he's having to deal with all these issues of, okay, well, how do I get the body back and everything? And the consulate's like, well, it's going to cost you $5,000 to ship the body back in a casket to America. He's like, you know, for your mother-in-law, this is what I would recommend you do. Only $150 will bury her in a plot in Jerusalem. And the guy thinks about it long and hard. He's like, you know what? I don't care what it costs. I'm taking my mother-in-law home to America. He's like, wow, you must really, really love your mother-in-law to spend $5,000 instead of $150. He's like, well, I heard a story years ago about a man who was buried in Jerusalem, and 3 days later, he rose again. And I'm not taking that chance. All right, now, mother-in-laws, we love you. And that was just a joke to show how Americans view mother-in-laws, right? My wife says, you know, how come you have problems with my family? You don't like my family? I said, baby, I love your family so much. In fact, I like your mother-in-law more than mine. My wife has the best mother-in-law in the world. Some of you still are not getting it. Wow. No, really. I really do love my mother-in-law. But in this case, this may have been the first time in the Bible where we have this bitter mother-in-law. But what does Ruth do? She sticks by her side the whole entire time. The whole time. So starting in verse 1 of chapter 2, it says, now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing. I love that, a man of standing. Notice, it's not a man of sitting on the couch in front of the TV. It's a man of standing, okay? From the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. We'll call him Bo, because he sounds hunky, right? But he's actually kind of old, if you think about it. Okay, verse 2 of chapter 2. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, let me go into the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I can find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out, and she entered a field and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in the field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Okay? So point number one, if you got a pencil, pen, whatever, if you have that piece of paper, one of the best ways to get out of depression is to get out. Or as Schwarzenegger would say, get out of here. Get out. There it is. You're better than me, dude. All right, so the first thing you got to do is get out. Okay, now they'll tell a woman who's going over, depression or whatever after, what is that, postpartum depression. They say, first thing you got to do, what? Go for a walk with your baby. Walk around the neighborhood. Get out. Be active. But not just getting out and being active. It's start doing the things that you're depressed about not wanting to do. It's doing something. You can't let the root of bitterness grow and fester. When life gives you lemons, you got to make lemonade, that cool, refreshing drink. Rather than being a victim of circumstance, you can be victor over the circumstance when you truly start to act. So don't be overtaken by these experiences. Rather, become an overcomer. Become an overcomer. Now, in this passage here, it says that basically Ruth is going to go out and glean amongst the fields. Now, that's just not language that we use. So I'm going to break down what gleaning means, okay? It is found in Leviticus 19, 9 through 10. You don't need to write this down or even just listen to it. This is God's law, basically, talking to harvesters, talking to people who own property and fields. He says, when you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings, which is the droppings, of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God. So essentially, this was God's, like, welfare system. It was like, okay, well, you know, here, if you don't got work, you just, you know, get a check from the government. There, it's like, okay, you go into the fields. And when somebody's picking grapes and it drops to the ground, they're not supposed to. They're not allowed to even pick it up off the ground. That's your job. You just kind of pick up the scraps and stuff. And, you know, here, the closest thing we have to that now is picking up cans. But that's what they used to do back then. And they couldn't even pick a tree clean. They had to leave some behind. And they couldn't go through second or third time. That was for the widows. That was for the orphans. That was for the aliens. It was kind of a cool way. Now, my wife has done some fruit tree picking. She is from Trinidad and Tobago, which is a southeasternmost Caribbean island. And she's smiling. She's like, he's going to tell the story. Oh, no. Okay. Well, when she was 4 years old, her father moved the whole family of 24 brothers and sisters. Yes, I just said it. Into the jungle. Okay? And we're talking bush jungle. And she was so excited. Everybody else was bummed. We leave the city. We leave the school system. We leave this. She's like, fruits. I'm dreaming of mangoes. That's all she used to dream about was mangoes. When she was a little kid and her dad would say, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a vegetable. That was before VeggieTales, by the way. He would go out on tour to America. I'm coming back. What do you want me to bring back? A dolly? No, bring me back a tomato. It's like, what? And she okay, a carrot, okay? But seriously, she loved fruits and vegetables, and their neighbor had the sweetest mango tree. What kind of mangoes, baby? Julie mangoes. How big were they? Nice. Nice size. Okay, now you were how old? 4 years old? She's 4 years old. She wakes up, and she's dreaming about mangoes. She's like, the neighbor has the sweetest tree. I'm going to go over there. She prances over to the edge of the property line, and she looks around, and she does not see the neighbor's dog, which happens to be a pit bull about the size of her. And so she's like, well, if I walk very carefully and trod very lightly, he won't hear me. She gets to the tree. She plucks one mango, two mangoes, three mangoes. She's now juggling them in her hand. All of a sudden, barreling out of the middle of nowhere like a ghost, there comes this dog chasing after her. She can't climb the tree. She has a handful of mangoes. She can't run back home because that's too far. So she looks at the neighbor's house, which is right next to her, and she runs up the stairs, onto the porch, jumps up on the ledge of the wall, and she's standing there balancing these mangoes, this little four-year-old girl, and the dog just starts nipping at her in the air. He's almost in reach, but he can't get her. The neighbor comes out, and you think he'd go off on her. But of course, he called away the dog, and then he got her a bag, and he filled it up with mangoes. And then every week from then on, he would send the bag so that she didn't lose a limb coming and being chased by a pit bull. But that was kind of the neighbor's way of helping and providing for them. They were going through some tough times as a family. And that's kind of what God was doing here. Did I get it right, baby? She said, yes, all right. But this story isn't about finding fruit. It's about a faithful woman finding the right guy. So going on in verse 4 of Ruth 2, it says, just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. This is how he greets them. The Lord be with you. And they said, the Lord bless you. So let's try that. The Lord be with you.
The Lord bless
you. Oh, that's weak. The Lord be with you.
The Lord bless you.
Very good. Now, when was the last time you pulled up to your machine shop and said that? Or you came into the classroom and said that? Or you're working at In-N-Out and you walk in and I'm here to work. The Lord be with you. No, it just doesn't happen, right? What does that say about this guy? As a boss, he's a good boss. He's a respected boss. He's a godly man. And because of that, his workers are godly, which is pretty darn cool. It says a lot about a man. So point number two, fill in the blank here. How you work says more about your Christian walk than how you worship. You know, we can put on our plastic smile. We can put on our Sunday's best. We can fake people. We can fool people on the weekends or even Bible studies. But how you are around your friends, how you are behind closed doors, how you are at school, how you are when you're in a whole different environment, it shows who you truly, truly, truly are. Are you two sides of a coin? Are you two different people? Are you fronting, as we would say today? I hope not. Okay, now before I move on further, since this is kind of a love story and we're kind of getting into it, I just want to say something to women. Don't go hunting to find the right person. When you are where God has called you to be, when you're in the center of his will, the right person will come alongside of you. Same thing to you guys. You know, I know stories about guys who would be like, yeah, I was going to the bars and looking for women and then finding out if they're Christian. You know, Don't go to a bar trying to find a Christian woman, unless, of course, it's this bar and it's on Sunday morning. But that shouldn't be your motivation in the first place. You understand what I mean? So Ruth did what she was called to do, go into the field, and because of that, alongside comes this Boaz, the right man just came alongside. Continuing on in verse 5. Boaz asked the overseers of the harvest, "Who does this young woman belong to?" He takes notice. But it's interesting wording, isn't it? Who does she belong to? I know some guys would like to own women, but that's just not biblical. So don't get any ideas from that, guys. Do not get any ideas. But he says, "Who does this young woman belong to?" And then the overseer replied, "She is a Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi." So her reputation has preceded her. It's a pretty big town. And the fact that he knows who she is and what she has done. And then she said, this is what she said to the overseer, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for one short rest in the shelter." So he's also noticed something else about her, that she's a hard worker. She got here early in the morning. She was polite. She says, "Please, can I follow behind? I'm not going to be invasive. I'm just going to pick up a few scraps and crumbs." And then she worked her butt off. One little break in the shelter, but she probably worked harder than the workers. So she's known now for her work ethic. Again, this ties back to the last one. How you work says more about who you are in certain ways than how you worship. So, and then Boaz says to Ruth, this is verse 8, "My daughter." Now this is Boaz talking for the very first time to Ruth. He doesn't know, she doesn't know that this is going to happen. You guys kind of know, you guys are kind of figuring it out already, that something's going to happen between them. He says, "My daughter." Why does he say that? We don't know how old he is, but we know that he's older. We know that he's a property owner. Now, according to Jewish tradition, he may be about 80, and she may be about 40. We don't know that for sure, but it's kind of like Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones kind of vibe, right? It's like, what the heck? Is this your grandpa? No, that's my man. All right. So he says to her, "Listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field. Don't go away from here. Stay here with me. Stay here with the woman who worked for me," he says in verse 9. "Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the woman. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you," which could imply that those can be some rough fields. "And whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." Now, normally the women are doing the filling here. So this is pretty serious. He's given her a major promotion here. I mean, she's not even working for him, and she's getting perks above those who would normally work for him. In verse 10, "At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground." Now, guys, don't get any ideas. "I'll know that I'll found the right one when she bows before me." No, don't get any ideas. First time I ever had that happen was in Uganda. Every woman that comes and greets you falls to the floor, and it's like dung floors. And they're like grabbing your feet. You're like, okay, chill out. And then even weirder, every guy holds your hand while you walk with him or sits on your lap and puts his arm around you to talk to you. It's intimacy issues, Seinfeld style. It's like, awkward, close talker. But in this case, she falls down to the ground before him, and she says this, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you would notice me, even notice me, a foreigner," she says. Now, I want to contrast this to last week. Last week, Naomi is basically saying, "Why are bad things happening to me? And why am I being treated so poorly?" In contrast, this week, in this chapter, Ruth is saying, "Why am I being treated so well? I'm a foreigner. Why are good things happening to me?" Now, if you have that change in character, it will give you a life of joy and a life of optimism rather than bitterness and regret. So again, it's kind of how you look at things. Okay, continue on in verse 11 of chapter 2. Boaz replied, "I've been told all about you and what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband." Wow, her reputation again precedes her. how you left your father and mother and your homeland. Wow, three things. And came to live with a people you did not know before. He realizes their sacrifice. In verse 12, he says, may the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord. So this is his prayer. May the Lord repay you. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. That's a beautiful prayer, right? And we all say prayers like that. Oh, may you get better. Oh, may you be able to pay rent. May you be able to this. May you be able to that. You know, point number three, write this down. Faithfulness will always be noticed and rewarded. Write that down. Noticed and rewarded. And he's noticing her faithfulness. He notices her sacrifice, leaving your family, leaving your father, leaving your mother, leaving her hometown, coming to a strange place with a bitter woman just to stay by her side. That is incredible. That faithfulness was not only noticed, but as you will see shortly, is rewarded. Ruth says this in verse 13, may I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord, she says. And this is her prayer again. You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant. She calls him your servant. Guys, don't get any ideas here. Though I do not have the standing of one of your servants. And then verse 14, at mealtime. Sometime has passed. She's still working. He's thinking about all the things he said, all the things she said. He's thinking about you know, all basically his prayer that the Lord would bless her, that the Lord would provide for her, the Lord would take care of her, would reward her. Verse 14, at mealtime, Boaz says to her, come over here. I wonder how she felt when that happened. Maybe I was grabbing too much. What's going on? Maybe I shouldn't have gotten that much water. And then she's like, come over here. Have some bread. Wow, bread, that's pretty nice. That's not just little scraps off the ground. That's something baked. I haven't had bread in a while. And then he says, and dip it in wine vinegar. Wow, can't remember the last time I could afford that. When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. This is the prime stuff. Roasted grain. She ate all that she wanted and had some left over. Now, that's how you know that it's the first date, because she had leftovers. Okay? Now, when it's the first date, the woman eats like a... oh, I don't want any more. Right? And later on, she eats doop, 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 when they're together for a while, and then he says, you done with that? He grabs her plate, and he starts eating, and you wonder why the guy has a big gut and the girl's skinny. Well, that's why. It's because of the leftovers, guys. It's because of the... So this has officially become the first date, whether either of them even knew it. And the odd thing about it is, I don't think in one way, he's thinking, she's way too young for me. And she's thinking, well, he's almost like a father to me, but in some weird way, something is happening. Some sort of chemistry is happening. Okay, so point number four. Sometimes we can be our own answers to prayer. Now, this sounds really shady, so I'm going to break this down for you. It does, doesn't it? But listen to this. Okay, we're going to go to Bethlehem because the Lord's blessing there. What does she do? They get up and they go, right? If they hadn't have gone, well, what would have happened? Okay, I'm going to go out and I pray that the Lord provides for me. So what do? I get up and I go out of the house and look. She's acting on her prayer. And what Boaz did was the greatest example of that. What Boaz did was such a great example. Okay, here it is. I love that the prayers are actually given here are answered by the ones who are praying it. Naomi said, we need food. As I said before, Ruth walks out of the house and goes and does it. Boaz says this, God will richly bless you, Ruth. May God reward you. And what does he do? He says, I just might answer that prayer myself. Come on over here. Take some food. Take some leftovers. And he is the one who blesses her. God's using him. So keep that in mind. The people that we live with, the people that we work with, you could be the answer to their prayers. You could be the answer to your prayers for them. I know it still sounds weird. So, like my friend, he's kind of kicked out of his house right now. He has no place to stay. So wow, I'm talking to him, dude, I really hope, I'll pray that the Lord provides a place. Come on, dude. Maybe I could be the answer to that prayer at the same time. I got a couch. You know what I'm talking about? Wow, I pray that homeless guy can eat for lunch. Wait a minute, I got $5 in my pocket. I got a fresh pair of socks in my car. What can I do? Don't just pray, but a lot of times when you are praying, it's actually God saying, hey, guess what? Time to start doing too. A lot of times we view God as a cosmic killjoy. We view God as this principle saying, no, do not run in the halls and all this stuff. And when we think God is always saying no, what he's really saying is, go. Go, come on. You ever tried to start one of those old like VW bugs? And you gotta bump start it, you gotta like push it, and you're like running down the street with all your friends. Well, try steering that thing with no power steering when it's not moving. You're not getting anywhere. You just have like 3 guys to do that. But when it's moving, it's easy, right? Maybe God's just waiting for you to move. So I'm not saying don't pray. I'm not saying that. But as long as all you do is sit and pray, you may not get the answer. Because if you don't step out and start doing, sometimes God may not have the opportunity to truly guide you. I mean, I wonder about Ruth. She gets out of the house. She's like, I'm going to go. Did she know where she was going? Did she have a map? No. She just got out and started walking. How did she know to go right or left? How did she know to find Boaz's field? That was God guiding her. If she hadn't have gotten out of the house, that may not have happened. If they had just sat there in the house and prayed and said, Lord, provide for us, they may have starved to death. Could have been a crime scene like 3 months later. It would have been nasty. Anyways, verse 15. Why did I do that? Why did I say that? Off the script. Okay, verse 15 of chapter 2. As she got up to glean, to pick up the scraps, Boaz gave orders to his men. This is a serious promotion he's doing. Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. That basically means let her pick straight off the tree. Even pull out some of the stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. So she doesn't even have to pick up the scraps. Now she can grab the sheaves. No, you know what? Just pick them up for her and set them down so she doesn't even have to reach over and yank them. That is serious promotion. He is, again, providing for her in the way that he had prayed that God would. Okay? And then he says, when she picks them up, basically, don't rebuke her. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley, so he let her do that too, that she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. Don't ask me what that is. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough, which is essentially the doggy bag. Okay, great worship today, huh? Did you guys like it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen this new worship leader. Where is she? Criselle, Criswell, come up here. Crizzle for shizzle. How does Snoop Dogg know it's raining? It's for drizzle. That's what he says when it's raining. He has an umbrella and he says it's for drizzle, manizzle. Come on up here.
Criselle.
When I heard that you were leading worship, Kyle's like, yeah, we got Criselle throwing down some worship. I'm thinking, okay, ones and the twos. Yo, what's up? What's up? You have a cool name. Okay, now, will you be Ruth for a second? Okay, this is your basket. Now imagine, if you will, she's going to put it on her head. Okay, imagine, if you will, that you break off these little pieces of barley. You know, barley's not big. You've seen those beer commercials, the hops and the barley and stuff, okay? Well, imagine how heavy that would be. One ephah, or how heavy is that? That's pretty heavy. What she brought home that day was the equivalent of 30 pounds that you are now carrying in that basket. That's pretty heavy, huh? You want to walk around for an hour with that? And then, oh, don't forget, she came home with her doggy bag. Can you imagine that? Thank you. Give her a big round of applause for 30 pounds of barley she comes home with, and a doggy bag. Imagine what her mother-in-law thought. She's like, what in the world is going on? Her mother-in-law said, where did you glean today? Where did you work? I know, gleaning, it's just so weird. Let's go gleaning, man. Blessed be the man who took notice in you, she said. Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one in whose place she had been working, the name of the man who had worked with her today. She said it was Boaz. She said, the Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. She added, this man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers or guardian redeemers. You guys are going to learn more about that next week. So point number five. God has a script, write this down, script for your life and provides where he guides. Script for your life and provides where he guides. God has answers that we don't know about. If you were to write a script for your life, that was actually the Twitter feed earlier, what would it be? And you know, we're always thinking of that. One of the things I like to ask kids is, what do you want to do when you're in 5 years? And it's like, I'm only 5 years old. I'm like, okay, play video games. What do you want to do when you're 20 years from now? Come on, relax, Mark. Don't think that far ahead. But seriously, if you were to write a script for your life, what would it be? The problem is, we continue to do that. And we don't stay true to God's script. Because he has a plan for you that is better than you can ever imagine. The problem is, we always try and go off script. We try and do a little rewrite. I don't like this chapter. Now imagine if Ruth and Naomi had the choice to write their own script. Of course they wouldn't have lost their husbands. But as you'll see in future chapters, the salvation of mankind rests in their loins, rests in their heritage. God has answers you do not know about. If Ruth were to write a script or choose a story for her life, she would have never chosen this. 3,000 years later, who are we talking about today? Who's my grandma, 108 years old, named after? Pretty darn cool. Verse 21, then Ruth, the Moabite, said, he even said to me, stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the woman who worked for him because in someone else's field you may be harmed, which shows that what she's doing, this gleaning, is very dangerous normally. So he's also a protector. So Ruth stayed close to the woman of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests, she did two harvests with them, were finished. And she lived with her mother-in-law. Believe it or not, that's a happily ever after. And she lived with her mother-in-law. Never does a story kind of end with, that's a positive thing. But now, as you see, Naomi's attitude is turned from Mara, from bitterness, back to pleasant because of the circumstances. She now has some hope. She has something to look forward to, which brings me to my sixth point, which is don't let your past hold you back from your future. Pretty simple, right? Don't let your past hold you back from your future. Women, there are still men out there like Boaz. Now, I'm not saying you should marry a man twice your age. But there are still men that are upstanding, upright in their community. There are still people out there that have integrity. There is room for a chapter two in your life, just like Ruth has had a chapter two. There's hope for you. But the issue is, when you drove here today, and you're on the freeway, for me it was a 91, how far would I have gotten the whole entire time I was looking in the rearview mirror? Would I have gotten here at all? I would have wrapped myself around a pole, right? You just can't be focused on your past. You do that, you're going to crash. Now, the toughest thing about the past is that it haunts us. And perhaps you just can't get it out of your head. You try not to think about it, you just can't let it go. Try not to think about it, just can't let it go. Perhaps it's because you've been hurt by someone. Perhaps it's because you have bitterness towards someone or bitterness towards God. There's no easy way to say it. Time will heal, but you got to let it go. You have to give it to God. If we were to look at each other and like for me, I got a scar right here on my chin. My beard kind of hides it, but it's from when I split my chin open because I was riding a bicycle. I mean, everybody has some sort of scar from stitches or from this or from that. But imagine if we saw each other kind of like in a Matrix world where all we saw was the emotional scars. See people missing arms and legs and headless people, a lot of heartless people. We've all been hurt. But if you continue to remain bitter as Naomi was, it's a jagged pill that's only punishing you. It's like swallowing rat poison and hoping that the rat will die. It's like holding your breath and hoping that someone else will suffocate. You got to let it go. You got to let it go. Now you may ask, what if the person that's hurt me doesn't deserve forgiveness? You know what? First of all, God is the judge. God will deal with that, not you. Don't you try and be judge and ruler. You got to let God be your defender. But what if he or she does not deserve your forgiveness? Did you deserve to be forgiven by God? Of course not. The answer is no. When you forgive a person, you set a prisoner free. Yourself. I'm going to say that again. When you forgive a person, you set a prisoner free. Yourself. You got to let it go. Don't look back. Move forward. Get up. Go out. Try to be in the center of God's will. Do as he wills. And if you are single, the right person will come alongside of you. My Ruth chapter 2 was meeting my wife, Avion. She changed my life forever. And I had the roughest past. I just couldn't even go into it right now. I've been hurt so much by someone before that I never should have loved again. But he gave me that Ruth too. He gave me that second chance. What I had to do was check in my baggage, just like Kyle did when he went to Israel. But you just don't collect it when you get there.
Thanks for listening to the teaching ministry of City Church in Anaheim, California. It's now your turn to give back the blessing you've just experienced to someone else. If you are in Southern California, join us for our weekly service at Chain Reaction every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. For more information, go to our website at lovehopecity.com or follow us on Twitter at @lovehopecity.